FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's Monday, June 19th, 2017. Well, you've been thinking about real estate. You know, we talk a lot about real estate here. There are opportunities there for sure. Well, person you're about to hear from started out her career selling dump trucks, if you can believe it. And from there, the natural course of events led to real estate, right? Well, I'm talking here with Whitney Nicely. Whitney, welcome to the show. We're thrilled to have you.
Thanks for having me here, Kerry. This is going to be fun.
Absolutely. So, hey, first, if you got any questions, comments for Whitney, myself, or anyone else you hear on the show, just send me an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. So, Whitney, what was it like selling dump trucks?
My great-grandfather started this dump truck company in 1939. So we've been around for a little while. I'm a fourth-generation entrepreneur, and our bucks have always come from trucks. So I grew up around dump trucks, and my papa realized that I had a little bit of a knack for selling, and these dirty old men that wanted to come buy our trucks liked talking to me instead of another dirty old man. So it just kind of naturally progressed with my personality, and I had a huge background in trucks. So it all happened kind of naturally, and I loved it. Oh, I loved selling those trucks.
And so now you're in real estate. Is there any similarities between selling dump trucks and selling real estate?
Yeah, and I kind of go from when you're trucking, a dump truck looks best when it's dirty. And one thing that my papa told me was not to shine up the trucks, not to make them look showroom perfect, because nothing sold a truck like proving it worked and that it was job site ready, because we were selling used dump trucks. And he told me that if they like it dirty, they're really going to like it clean. And I think it's the same thing in houses. So I do some flips, and a lot of times I'll take dirty pictures of the house before the yard's cleaned up, before the toys are put away, while the trash is overflowing. I put the dirty pictures up and people like it. That way they can see what it's going to look like after they clean it and pretty it up. So the same thing in dump trucks and houses. If they like it dirty, they're really going to like it clean.
All right. So how did you wind up going from dump trucks to real estate? Should ask you that question.
Well, throughout the years, my family started buying houses and commercial land and industrial land. Like, they've got a landfill also. So I was around trucks and real estate, and they always trucked so that they could buy houses. And my mom has always had rental income coming to the mailbox. I mean, I grew up as a real estate investor's kid with mailbox money. Like, I thought everybody had money in the mailbox. I didn't realize most people had bills, or that we had bills too in the mailbox. But I just thought everybody had money that happened every month. And so when I got into my 20s, I asked my mom, I was like, wait a second, why don't I have any money coming? And she was like, well, you have to buy stuff. You have to invest, and then you get mailbox money. But the problem was, I was in my 20s and money went everywhere except into real estate. So I had to figure out how to start buying houses without money.
And so you were on kind of a journey, huh?
Oh, yes. And I, you know, most people have somebody in their family that has a small business and they have the opportunity to go work for the family company. And a lot of us kind of say, you know what, I just can't do it. It's too much family. And I tried to do the family business. And then I said, you know what, I need to go do my own thing. Y'all got to be your own boss. I need to go do my own boss thing.
Mm-hmm. All right. So basically, you had to branch out, kind of grow, and real estate. How did that happen?
I envision myself kind of being like a lazy landlord. And this is what I do now, is I fix up a house and get it to where you should be able to maintain it. Don't call me if the toilet breaks. Don't call me if, you know, something happens and you're going to be late on your rent. Just send me your money and I won't bother you and you don't bother me. And that's what I really wanted, so that I could have plenty of free time to do whatever else came about that I wanted to do, instead of being, you know, shackled down to a desk all day, every day. I wanted that freedom and I wanted the money to still come in. And the only way I could see that happening was to get into real estate. So I learned about lease options kind of through my journey, and they fit me perfectly and the style of the life I wanted to live.
And so what was your first property that you bought?
My first property I bought with cash, not with a lease option. It's a half acre piece of industrial land in the city of Knoxville. And my brother and I partnered on it because I didn't have a clue what I was doing and neither did he. And we bought it for $1,500. And then we rented it back out to our neighbor who was using our driveway for $250 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And in the negotiations, it took us a couple months to get to where, you know, they were going to rent from us and everybody was happy. So in the negotiations, I asked them to pay for the time that they'd been driving on our driveway since we'd owned the property. And that ended up being about 6 months. So as soon as we got a tenant, we were full on our investment.
You basically got it for free, huh?
Yes, yes. That's and now cool. We rent the driveway for $250 a month. We still do that. And we rent the land to somebody else for $500 a month. So on a $1,500 investment, we collect $750 a month.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. And everybody's happy, huh?
Exactly. While we were doing this, though, before I learned about lease options, we also split a little house and we put about $36,000, like our entire life savings combined, mm-hmm. into one house. And we rented it. And that's when I figured out I didn't want to be a regular landlord and do regular rentals because I wasn't getting my money back fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
So the first lease option I did was on one of our houses that we already had in the rental program. But I put somebody new in it and they gave us about $10,000 to move in and we sold it to them for $78,000. So we doubled our money mm-hmm. and got a large chunk of it back almost immediately.
So these lease purchase deals, how do they work?
So on that house, we already owned it free and clear. So I advertised it as a rent to own and, you know, just tell me how much you can give me to move into this. And I'll give you 2 or 3 years to improve your credit or establish a job history or do whatever you need to do to make you pretty on paper so that you can go get a mortgage on it. And that's what they did is they gave us $10,000 to move in and they pay us a larger rent than what I was getting when it was in the regular rental program. And they're on schedule to buy it later this year, actually, in August.
Oh, excellent. And
see if that happens, though.
Yeah. So, but you've done a number of these lease purchase deals, huh?
I've done 54 in the last 3 years. Yes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them come back. I've only had one person actually get their mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them come back and I get another option fee and somebody else who wants to think about trying to buy the house.
Really? So how do you find these deals?
Tired landlords, probably number one way that I find these houses. And most people know somebody who is either accidentally a landlord, like they had a house and they wouldn't sell, so they just started renting it, or somebody who thought they wanted to be a landlord and then it ended up being more work than they wanted to put into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so either way, they're just tired of having somebody else live in one of their properties. And so I'm kind of like a professional tenant. I buy these houses on a lease option. So I sign up that I am going to be renting it and I can sublet it out to mm-hmm. somebody else.
Right.
And that I'm going to be buying the house sometime in the next 5 to 10 years. And most tired landlords love that plan.
Mm-hmm. So how do you identify these reluctant landlords or accidental landlords, if you will?
I advertise for them. Do you have a property and you're tired of dealing with tenants and toilets? Call me.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have, you know, somebody that didn't pay on time and you're tired of chasing them around? Call me.
Right. And people respond to these ads. Yeah.
Yeah. Because everybody is marketing to, you know, I buy, I sell, I'll help you do anything you want to do, blah, blah, blah. I am like a sniper shot. I am looking for a tired landlord. And tired landlords, just like everybody else, they like to feel special. They like to feel like somebody is talking directly to them, not just one size fits all, but I am the person that they need to be dealing with. And so they call me all the time.
Right.
And sometimes they find me after they've listed. And so I have to tell them that I'm not dealing with listed properties.
Right.
So whenever it expires, call me then.
Uh-huh. So, and there's like a lot of these people out there, huh?
Tons of people. And a lot of times I call them bridge people because when you graduate college, you think, okay, I need to go buy a house. So you buy a little 2-1 and it's fine until, you know, you get a wife and a kid. Then you need a 3-2 and you need a garage and you need a place for the playset. But, you know, you think, okay, well, I'll just rent this one out because it's no big deal. And I got buddies that can't buy. They'll rent from me. And then, you know, 10 years later, you wake up and you're in the third house and you got these other two, but the kids have ball and dance and you're parents are older and they want you to come visit and you're climbing the corporate ladder and you just got too much going on. And then suddenly your tenant moves out overnight and it's just beyond you. Like, you just cannot do another single thing. So a lot of people find themselves just making the mortgage payment on an empty house because they just can't carve out the time to interview agents to list it. They don't want to go through all that headache, and they sure don't want to put another tenant in that they're going to have to get used to and deal with. So they find me, and I take all of that stress and problem off of them.
And then, so you rent the house and then you're going to sublet it. How long are you going to have it empty for?
I usually have 90 days before I need to make a payment because, you know, if you've been making a payment on a house that's been empty for a lot of times 6 months, a year, sometimes I've talked to landlords that have had empty houses for 3 or 4 years. So when I ask for 3 more months, that's like the light at the end of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. And I use those 3 or 4 months to make sure that I'm going to find somebody that's got money to move in and they've got a job history where they can make the payments and they actually want to buy the house. And then I give them about a year to buy the house. Otherwise, you know, their starry-eyed plans kind of die off and they go find somewhere else.
So they're giving you a lump sum when they move in?
Yes.
As a down payment or whatever?
It's an option fee. I'm right. not licensed as a mortgage broker and I don't hand out mortgages. They get down payments. I get non-refundable option fees or move-in fees.
Right. I see. Interesting. So now you're teaching other people how to do this?
I do. I started teaching women how to do this because we just spend more money and we just like having more money coming in. But then I started talking to a lot of men and they were telling me that they really wanted to provide and protect for their family after they passed. Mm-hmm. And they really had a heart to build up, you know, maybe they're in a corporate job now or, you know, they're busy or they're very successful, but they just still don't have that time to go out or they don't want to sink a whole bunch of money into something. So I've started working more with men now who really want to build up that side portfolio and not have a bunch of agents bothering them or, you know, they just want to do it on their own. They kind of want to cowboy it a little bit and, you know, figure it out and be smart and, you know, be proud of something. So men and women, yes, absolutely.
All right, so the rent that you're charging for the home, is that the same as you're paying or?
No, I usually get in my market. I'm in East Tennessee. It's not a very high rental market. It's a steady rental market, but it's not like high. So if my payment's $800, I can probably rent the house for $1,100 or $1,200. So I'm clearing $300 or $400 a month, but I've got 19 of them. So, you know, after you do that 19 times, you're still making pretty good money every month. The first one or two that you do, it's, you know, looking like $300 or $600, which is not a huge deal, but maybe that makes half of your mortgage payment for you. Mm-hmm. And then you do another deal and now maybe we're making your whole mortgage payment based on what you're collecting on rental income. Or maybe you keep it and every time you get $1,000, $2,000, you go buy a piece of land and rent it for $250. And you just keep building and keep building and keep building. I don't think real estate investors are ever really satisfied with their portfolio.
Yeah, well, that's life, I guess, right?
We can always be bringing more money in.
Yeah, we can always do that. That's
and it's
for
really
sure.
cool to, you know, be at a football party or a New Year's party and be like, so how many houses did you buy this year? Yeah. And, you know, everybody's kind of like, well, you know, I thought about buying one. We really looked at one. And you're like, oh, because I got 13.
So what about when these things are wrecks, though, here?
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, you're looking for wrecks, but you're going to have to pay money to fix them up, right?
Yeah, you can, or you can put them out there and let your tenant buyer fix them up. A lot of people, maybe they don't have $10,000 to put down, but they could put $5,000 down and they could, you know, they are an electrician. Right. So they could fix all the electrical issues and their buddy is a plumber.
Interesting.
And they'll fix it. They got another buddy that installs heat and air units and they can get a really sweet deal. So they'll improve it because they're wanting to buy it. They're wanting to make it their own. Their women are wanting to get in there and nest and decorate and actually own something. It's the American dream. And, you know, 18% of Americans can get pre-qualified for a mortgage. 18% of us can go to a bank today, give our W-2s and say, let me buy something. That means I am working with 80% of the market. And those people have money mm-hmm. or have the ability to get to some money, and they will take a junker house. Because, I mean, if I'm buying it for, let's say, $75,000 and it needs $25,000 worth of work and then it's going to be worth $125,000, mm-hmm. well, I'd rather sell it to somebody for $85,000, let them do the work, and let them buy it, you know, with instant equity.
So you're giving them a really good deal
this
thing while we're at it, right?
Absolutely. And it gives them the incentive to actually do the best job that they can on it.
Yeah, sure.
And it's that pride of ownership.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So does everybody want to still be a homeowner?
I think deep down inside, Gen Xers and baby boomers, yes. Baby boomers especially want to be landlords. I'm a millennial. I'm 32 years old. And most millennials can't see past Friday night still. Even if they are parents, they still can't see past the weekend. So I'm not sure that's the case. But as Gen Xers and baby boomers own more, there's more millennials that want to rent. So, you know, mm-hmm. if you are a Gen Xer or a baby boomer, it's a perfect time to start investing because my generation, we're just not going to be owners like the older generations.
Yeah, like mine. I'm a boomer.
Yeah.
I'm a boomer. It was a foregone conclusion you were going to own your own home. And, you know, that's kind of the way it worked, you know?
So as a millennial, I saw that and I was like, hold on, wait a minute. None of my people are buying. When they do start buying, I'm already going to have 100 houses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what about setting goals here? How do you help people set goals for themselves?
Well, I want you to be realistic. And what I really help people do is I'm kind of like the starter coach or, you know, the starter mentor. I want you to do your first, your second, third, fourth or fifth deal with me. So that you get in a rhythm and you can practice it and you can repeat it. Because really, once you do that first one, the second one, the third one, it's a lot easier to do the fourth and fifth one. And from there, all you do is repeat it until you get up to 20 or 100.
Yes.
I also buy apartments. I can teach you how to buy apartments because there's a whole different formula. There's a whole different, you know, criteria that you're going to look at, especially when you get over 5 units.
You're talking about condos here or?
No, I'm talking about apartment complexes.
Oh,
I've got 19
complexes.
Apartment units.
Oh, okay.
Duplexes, so. Triplexes, quadplexes, 10 units, 100 units, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is that you want to buy. Because I buy triplexes, 3 units, for less than I buy single family houses sometimes.
Wow, that's pretty cool. All right. Well, hey, I think you've given us a good exposure to this. If you're looking to start out, if people want to find out more about you, Whitney, where's the best place to go?
I'm on Facebook. I'm pretty mouthy there, Whitney Nicely. And my website is WhitneyNicely.com.
I love your colloquialisms. I got to tell you, I love them. You know, hey, well, we will have a link to your site in our show notes on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. If you have not signed up for our newsletter already, please do so as soon as you can. And look, you can find us on Facebook at Financial Survival Network, Twitter at Carrie Lutz. And don't forget that you get the newsletter for free, a whole bunch of reports. Just go and sign up. And if you got any questions, comments on this interview with Whitney, which is really enlightening, or any others that we've done, KL@CarrieLutz is the email address. And Whitney, we really appreciate you coming on. We wish you the best of luck. It sounds like you're really on the path, and continued good luck and good fortune to you.
All right. Thanks for having me, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.